Welcome to another edition of Brews and Crews. I am your host, Chris Jacobson, and today I have a special guest here who is going to show us more and talk to us more about the brewing process, and his name is Corey Leeske. Corey, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Now, you have brought us a couple things, and the best thing about this is even though it might say a different brewery's on here, it is stuff that you have made yourself because you are part of a Winona, what is it like? I would say it's a legend of the Winona home brewers, which to me, I feel is something that people need to know more about in Winona because we don't hear much about it. And you are part of that group. So Corey, welcome. Your love for beer comes from where?
Honestly, I didn't even like beer when I started brewing beer. I started getting into brewing beer. Brewing had something that had always kind of fascinated me, but I thought I'd be doing more ciders and meads.
Sure.
But when you buy the equipment kit, it comes with a recipe kit. And I'm like, oh, I got the kit. I might as well brew it.
Yeah.
And once I could place where the flavors come from in beer, I started to love it a lot more. Part of it was growing up, my parents' craft beer for them was like a Leinenkugel summer shandy.
Oh, boy, that's pretty tame nowadays, isn't it?
Right, yeah. It's the main beer in our house was Golden Light.
Sure. And that's a staple all around, I think, the Midwest because Mick Golden, I lived in Atlanta for a couple of years. I couldn't find Mick Golden to save my life. However, I could find Yuengling left and right. Nice. So it is one of those things that Mick Golden is one of those beers that we have around here that people just absolutely love. So you brought us a couple beers, and I just want you to tell us, you brought two, and yes. I want you to just tell us which one is which and what we're going to possibly be tasting, and then we'll get into the process, because I would love you to take us through the process of how this works, because you just told me that you had a home brewing kit.
Yep.
And that's how it all started. So what do we got in the small one?
The small one, I really need to do a better job of labeling my kegs. It's either the famous Halle Berry,
okay,
my raspberry jalapeno ale that has won best beer at the craft beer tour.
Yes.
What, 4 or 5 times? I don't know. I lost count how many times I beat Island City.
Uh-oh.
Either that or it's the Catwoman, the sour version of that same beer.
Okay, sounds good. And then what's in the big one?
In the stainless steel growler is one that I haven't thought of a clever name for yet because I haven't served it at an event. But it's a winter spice version of my mojito ale.
Ooh.
In base of mint.
Nice. So if we're starting this off, which one should we use that one as the main event, your winner, your gold standard that you win, or should we have this one first?
I'm going to say let's start with the raspberry jalapeno one.
Let's do it. All right. So if you're watching, you're going to see Corey's got a small version. Now, is this, when you're making this, do you make it in big portions or small batches?
My brew system is about 10 gallons.
Okay, sounds good. Ooh, it smells good. All right, so first off, we got a cheers to this. Corey
cheers.
Brought us beer. I didn't have to go get any. Corey's bringing it to us. And again, can you remind the audience what this one is called?
It's either Halle Berry or Catwoman. We'll tell if it's sour when we drink it, it's Catwoman. If it's not sour, it's Halle Berry.
Perfect. I'm going to say that's the sour.
I'm pretty sure that's just regular Halle Berry.
That's regular Halle Berry.
A little bit of sourness comes from the raspberries.
Oh, gotcha. And what else is it mixed with then?
So the unique ingredients are just raspberry and jalapeno.
Okay.
I want to say for a 10-gallon batch, I use about 12 jalapenos. I'm brewing it for an event like the craft beer tour where I'm trying to please a crowd.
Yep.
Then I remove all the seeds and membranes so there's like no heat to it.
Okay.
If I'm brewing it just for myself, I like to leave some seeds and membranes. I like a little bit of bite.
Yes.
In there.
So if anybody's wondering, it says that there's jalapenos in here, but mm-hmm. It's like a hint of the flavor, but I don't have any spice. So it's not like it's burning my mouth by any means. Now you said that other times you'll leave the seeds in.
Some of them.
Then I will assume it's going to be somewhat spicy on your tongue.
Yep.
Okay, so this one doesn't have them in it.
No.
No. And this is going down quite smooth. And what kind of beer is it again?
It is an experimental ale.
Like an experimental ale, perfect.
The malt bill has some smoked malt in it. Some Golden Promise is the main base malt. And then there's usually a little bit of honey malt or some oats in there to give it some body,
okay,
some sweetness.
And this is the one that you keep winning the craft beer tour with?
Yep.
Okay, and how many times have you won it?
Four or five.
Four or five. And how many years has the craft beer tour been in town? Like six?
Seven, I believe.
Seven? Is this year seven or it's been seven?
It's been seven, okay. I'm pretty sure.
And you're going to be there again this year?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, yeah, I've kind of figured that.
And the very first year they did it, they didn't allow the homebrew club to be part of the voting, so we couldn't win the first year.
Gotcha.
And then there's only been about one, maybe 2 years that Halle Berry didn't win.
Wow. So what are, when people, do they have to give feedback when they're voting, or is it just strictly vote?
It's just strictly vote. We get feedback, you know, as we're at our booth serving
sure
beer.
What's the, like, what, when they taste this, what's like the one thing that they compliment this beer on? Is there something specific they go, man, I just absolutely love fill in the blank?
It's a lot of time they love how balanced it is,
sure,
how you get that sweetness from the raspberries and stuff. But then it's also like the jalapeno's there, but it's not overpowering.
Yeah, that's exactly what I tasted too, because it's almost like a sour that someone would maybe go in there just experimenting with beer. Because what I always say to people, if you're going to start trying craft type beers, start at the low end of the IBUs, because mm-hmm, if you go up to the 80s, you might set yourself up for failure, and you're going to be like, I don't ever want to go back to that. Because I always tell everyone, the first time I went to what's now called Two Fathoms, the former Island City, I started off with the Berliner Weiss because it was easy to drink, and I didn't know anything other than, like you said, McGolden, Bud Light, the cheap stuff like that. But this one would be a good one for someone that's just starting off, because like you said, it sounds like it's going to be like, oh man, who wants to drink a jalapeno? But I'm not tasting jalapeno hardly at all. Just a slight hint, I taste more of the raspberry.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you did a fantastic job with the balance, like people said. Now, what was the first year you had won?
I want to say that would have been the second year, and that was where I won best beer, and then there was a three-way tie for best brewery.
Oh, and you were in that mix too?
Yeah, the one on a homebrew club was...
Nice.
And yeah.
How many years has the homebrew club been around? Because I know I've heard about them, but I didn't know much about them until the craft beer tour came into town.
So I started in the homebrew club, I want to say probably 11, 12 years ago.
Okay, so it's been around quite a while.
Yep, and it had been around for a few years before that. And apparently there was another one on a homebrew club before this one.
So I think I know what you're talking about. Where is it located now, or when you first started? Was it located in Goodview?
No.
That's probably the one I remember. It used to be in an old gas station across from Merchants Bank over there.
Yeah, so that was another brewery.
Okay.
That was Winona Brewing.
Oh, it was that part of the same crew?
No.
No, totally different crew. Okay.
Honestly, none of the homebrew club members really liked Winona Brewing.
Oh, no.
Their beer was not great.
Okay. Well, then you have yourself, and how many other people are in this club?
I want to say there's probably 20 to 25 active members on Facebook.
Oh, really? Okay.
And then we probably have 5 to 10 that show up to our monthly meetings regularly. And then sometimes we'll get up to like about 20 people in our regular meetings.
Oh, so this is a real serious type thing.
Yeah. And
awesome.
For homebrew clubs, we are tiny.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So they're bigger than this normally.
Yep.
So what does a homebrew club mean? What's the difference between what you guys do and what someone that just opened up a small brewery is doing? Is there any difference? Or?
Yeah, we can't sell anything.
Okay. You can just bring it and give it away.
Yeah. So we meet the third Tuesday of every month at 7:30, just on the street here at the No Name.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yep. And we bring whatever we have new fermented, or whatever keg we found in the corner of our basement. That's actually where this keg of Halle Berry came from. This is quite a few months old.
So is it better if it gets older then? If, like wine, you know, they say the more it's better with age. Is this the same with beer like this at all?
No, most of the time you want beer fresh.
Okay, so it is different than wine. And that's a good thing for people to know that maybe don't know much about beer, the process, and then going over to wine. Because I feel like wine people are directly into wine and beer people are really into beer, but the cross paths of that is a little different in the fact that usually they like one or the other, not both.
I like both.
You like both?
Yeah.
I'm starting to like wine a little bit now, but it can't be something really, really fruity and sweet because I just get like a stomach ache.
Oh, yeah, those like Boone's Farm-esque. Like,
Boone's Farm, yes.
Just as soon as you take a sip, you're like, I think I have diabetes now.
I get diabetes now. So now is this healthy for me? Because you got raspberries in here. You got jalapenos in here. I feel like I'm getting my fruit and my vegetables.
Sure.
Sure. So I love that there's a homebrew club that I was aware of because of you and because of the craft beer tour, which is brought to light, but it's been around for so much longer than what I even thought of. And I got it mixed up with the one that had a small brewery in Goodview, but that was probably before the craze of all the breweries have come around, because I feel like within the last 10 years or so, breweries are popping up everywhere like a winery.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Really, I actually want to open up my own brewery here in Winona.
Really?
I'm hoping to do it before I turn 40, so in the next 4 years.
Okay, so you're 36 now.
Yep.
4 years from now, the goal is to open up a small brewery somewhere in Winona.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, we already have one in town. Does that factor into it, or are you thinking, I want to do this because I absolutely just love doing this?
I want to do it because I love doing it.
Yeah.
But also, breweries are an interesting business, because it used to be, you wanted to grow as big, as fast as possible, distribution, and that business model has changed, where now breweries are more like your mom-and-pop pizza shops. You got your corner brewery, and that's where people go, where everybody knows your name.
Yeah, absolutely, yes. And then you go to the bigger ones, probably like a Surly or a Toppling Goliath, and they might not know you as well. And I've been to Toppling, and they're awesome place. I've never been to Surly, though. And
I've never been to Surly either.
No?
No.
So when you go, do you have a favorite brewery in the area that you absolutely love to go to?
I mean, Two Fathoms is the one that I'm there at least every other week, if not more.
Okay.
And, like, hang out there. It's a great atmosphere. I love that I can bring my son, who's 9, with, and nobody bats an eye. In fact, most of the time he's not the only kid there.
Yep. And they have board games for kids and stuff like that. And as long as the parents are drinking responsibly, I suppose it's not really a big deal either. And that's good. But now outside of Winona, what's your favorite one?
Oh, that's a tough one.
That's a tough one? I'm assuming you've been to many of them.
Yes.
Okay, good.
For like atmosphere, I really like Sylvan Brewing in
Lanesboro. Yes,
yes. Just that old grain mill and the fact that they reclaimed as much of the wood as possible for the furniture and everything.
That's really cool.
It's just, it makes you feel like you're walking into an old time tavern, like in a Dungeons and Dragons adventure or something.
Yeah, and they've actually enclosed it and made it a little bit bigger lately. Yeah. They have a garage door. I was just there. My father-in-law. He plays. Sometimes they plays there. It's like a one-man, two-man group of music, and we'll go there whenever we can because Lanesboro is such a beautiful town.
Yeah.
So that one is awesome for not only I like the beer too, but I think Sweet Bender is my favorite one. But also the atmosphere is really cool. And Lanesboro is like this old classic town that is just like, it's got heritage. Yep. And like you said, it's like stepping into an old school place. And it's really, really cool what they've done with that place.
And I know the head brewer owner there actually did his like internship at Island City.
Yes, because I talked to him a couple of years ago when they first opened and he told me that same thing.
Yep.
That's really cool because Island City came at like 2017, I believe, and something I wasn't like that, big into it, so I didn't know much about it, and then it grew on me, just like I was saying before, and now I know just about everyone that's there, even the new owners I'm starting to know too, which is really kind of fun. Yeah. So the atmosphere in breweries, I absolutely love, and like you said, it's just, I don't know, every one of them has a different theme, it seems like.
Yeah, you get some of those that have like the real industrial theme, a lot of stainless steel everywhere. Mm-hmm. They're usually set up in an old garage or an old warehouse because that's where it was cheap enough to build. Breweries are expensive, so if you can save any money by moving into an old abandoned warehouse, that's what you're going to do. I know of a couple in like California that are in like old Air Force plane hangars.
Really?
Yeah.
That would be cool. I mean, it's plenty of space.
Mm-hmm.
But those vats are, I think they're called vats, right? The brew?
Vats is a decent term for them. Fermenters.
Fermenters. Yeah. Those are, I hear, like $150,000 if you buy one.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
It depends on the size and stuff too.
Sure. So now going over to your level as a home brewer, you had a kit that started this whole thing off that you love. What does is it just like something you can buy at a store?
Well, I had bought mine at the old Von Klomp cheese shop in Rochester, or just outside of Rochester. That is now South by Southeast Brewing.
Oh, yeah. Just north of Rochester.
Yep.
Yeah, and I have not yet been there, and I've been meaning to, and it's like always crosses my mind, but it's like 10 miles outside, and I just kind of forget about it. But I do need to go there because I've seen their stuff on tap.
Yeah.
So that's where you got your stuff from?
Yeah.
Cool.
And that was, at the time, the closest homebrew supply shop. Now there's one in La Crosse, Onalaska, that's part of Skeleton Crew Brewing.
Yes, I love that place.
Yeah, that place, when I first went there, their beer was kind of meh, but they've really improved over the past couple of years.
Yes, they have.
And then that's where I tend to go now to buy my ingredients.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. They sell the ingredients there too?
Yep.
So if you're going to start this up, you need the kit. What does the kit consist of?
It depends. There's a lot of different types of kits.
Okay, there is.
Yeah, I started with a kit that was really just a pot that I do on the stove and a plastic bucket to ferment in.
Sure.
And that's going to be one of your cheaper entry-level things. And now there's a lot of things like the Grainfather and some other automatic brewing systems.
Okay.
That are really nice, but those cost probably about, if you find them on sale, about $1,000 to have a little 5-gallon brew system.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But it takes a lot of the guesswork out.
Sure, sure.
Does a lot of the temperature controlling and stuff for you.
Gotcha.
Where, like, right now I'm brewing with a 15-gallon pot on a propane burner outside and a Coleman cooler that I converted and put a false bottom into for a mash tun.
Okay. Wow, you're getting creative then.
Yeah.
Now, I am assuming, because I have no knowledge of brewing beer, I just like drinking it. Mm-hmm. So how many ingredients roughly are you looking for? Like, what's the main ingredient in the beer then?
At least the main ingredient that creates or becomes alcohol is probably the grain.
Okay.
And you use malted grain, which means that it's been allowed to sprout just a little bit, and then it's kilned to stop the sprouting action. And that allows access to the starches that are inside the kernel. Then when you go to make beer with it, you add warm water to it, and that activates certain enzymes in the grain itself that breaks down those starches into simple sugars.
Okay.
And it's those simple sugars that the yeast will eat to piss out alcohol and fart CO2.
Okay, piss out alcohol and fart CO2. I love that. Great terminology, right?
Yep.
So when you're doing this, how much would making something cost you to do then? Other than the equipment that you need, when you're gathering all the ingredients, how much do you think it costs? What do you do, a 10-gallon, you said?
Yep, I do 10 gallons.
How much does that cost to make?
If I'm doing something super simple, like just a grain, single hop and yeast, I could probably brew a 10-gallon batch for like $50.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's pretty, and that's a lot of beer. I mean, mm-hmm. not for a brewery, but for personal use, that's a lot.
You figure, I usually judge if you're doing 12-ounce bottles or, you know, about 12-ounce pours.
Sure.
It's about 10 pours per gallon of beer.
Okay, that's pretty good then.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So that's good to know, because I don't know what the standard is for how much you would brew. So like at a brewery, how much are they making at a time gallon wise?
So
quite a bit, I assume.
Yeah, Island City's system that is now 2 Fathoms was a 15 barrel brew system with 30 barrel fermenters and bright tanks.
Okay. Do you mind if I have more?
Yeah, happily yourself. So a barrel is 31 gallons.
Okay.
So
they're brewing about 31 gallons at a time? Is that correct?
No, they were brewing that times 15.
Oh, geez. Okay, that's
and
a lot.
They would do double brew days to fill their fermenters up to the full 30 barrels.
Oh, okay. I got you. So they're brewing quite a bit.
Yeah.
And then obviously they got to figure out how many pours they can get. So yeah, that's a lot of beer to be brewing. And then how long does it take for the process? Is each one different? Like if you have a lager, an ale, IPA?
So lagers are cold fermented. So just naturally by how the biology of yeast works.
Sure.
The colder it is, the longer it's going to take. But with a typical lager, you're getting more crisp, clean flavors. You're not getting very many flavors from the yeast itself.
Yep.
An ale is fermented warm and usually ferments a bit quicker. I don't have a lot of experience lagering because I don't have the equipment to keep my fermentation tanks cold.
Oh, so, right. You got to keep it cold somewhere, yep. Like in a refrigerator, I assume.
Yeah.
Okay. Where gotcha.
I brew with Minnesota basement temperatures, so it's pretty consistent, like 65, 70 degrees.
Yeah.
Where lagering, you tend to want it down like 40, 50.
Okay. Now, I read somewhere, it was, I think, a Men's Health magazine years ago. It said making a lager is the hardest one to make. Is there truth to that?
Yeah, because you do need more accurate temperature control.
Okay.
And if you're trying to make something like a Golden Light or a Busch Light, that is honestly the hardest type of beer to make.
Really?
There's no flavor there. So if you make any mistake, it's going to be noticeable in the flavor.
Sure, sure. Yeah, because, well, I mean, when you start drinking this stuff and you go back to a McGolden or a Bud Light, it doesn't have that much flavor, like you said. So if they make one mistake, it could just taste completely different, huh?
Yep.
Wow, that's so interesting to think about, because you think, I got, you know, Bud Light, McGolden, and you can buy a case of that for like $20. You would think it's a pretty simple process to make, doesn't take much work, but you're saying that's one of the harder ones to actually make.
It's still a simple process, but if you make a mistake anywhere in that simple process, it's going to be noticeable.
Right,
for them
right.
to make that much of this flavorless beer that consistently that is actually really impressive. It's, if I ever go to a new brewery, one that I haven't been before, and they have something like a light lager on tap, I tend to order at least a sample of that one, because it's a really good indicator of how good that brewery is.
Oh, that's a good idea.
If they can brew a good light lager, that's really impressive.
Sure.
I can't do that.
Right. You know, they had Damn Near Water back when it was Island City, and that one, to me, had a little bit more flavor than a Bud Light or a McGolden.
Yep.
And was it due to the process of how they made it that they maybe are, you know, they're not as consistent as a Bud Light because Anheuser-Busch is humongous?
Right.
Is that maybe a little bit of why, or they just wanted a little extra flavor?
They just want a little extra flavor.
Sure.
Most craft breweries, while they appreciate a light beer, they don't want to drink a light beer. They
right.
want something that has a little bit of flavor.
Mm-hmm.
So most of them will have a little bit more of a flavorful grain used as their base grain.
Okay.
Or something like that to give it a little bit, to still make it a craft beer, because
sure.
since they're not brewing it at the levels that Anheuser-Busch are,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're never going to have it at the price point of a Busch Light.
Right,
either.
Yeah, that'd be tough. And I always think it's a good idea to have a light lager to appease someone that may not be into this type of beer, so
right.
they'll still come and obviously enjoy it. Because I know that, like, when I go to breweries, they don't sell wine, so my mom doesn't really care much to go to it. But I know that's a whole different process of probably I need this liquor license and that liquor license in order to sell that kind of stuff.
Yep.
So that it's good to have that light beer on there, because there might be someone that's just getting into it and they're like, I don't want to go to an IPA right off the bat and just be like, oh gosh, this is terrible. Because it does take an acquired taste to get to that point of an IPA.
It does, yeah. I know the first IPA I had, I was not a fan of it. And then as I drank more and more beer,
yeah.
I started to appreciate them more and more.
Sure.
I remember the first time I brought home a 4-pack of Todd the Axeman.
Oh, I love Todd the Axeman. That's
right?
Great.
And this was back when Todd still worked at Surly.
Oh, so it was named after a guy that works there.
Yeah, it was named after Surly's original head brewer.
Okay.
And he actually had gone over to Europe, I think somewhere in Belgium, and brewed with a brewery there.
Oh, cool.
And this brewery made the beer Todd the Axeman as an homage to him.
Oh, man.
And he was into heavy metal music, played guitar.
Sure. I wondered what the can was all about, because I see the can and I love it, and there's on tap some places in town here, but I didn't know what it was all about. And that's cool that you know that backstory. I don't know, it's probably on the can. I've never even read the backstory.
Yeah, and Todd is no longer at Surly. He's now at Three Floyds Brewing.
Oh, Three Floyds. They got like War Pigs or something like that, right? The
Black
Hands?
War Pigs is a collaboration brewery between Three Floyds and another European brewery, Mikkeller, I think it is.
Oh, cool. Do you know the guy personally?
No.
Just know the backstory?
Yeah, I know.
Okay. I thought maybe, you know, if you're into the game of brewing beer, I figure maybe you know some of these people personally on a personal level.
It's, I know quite a few brewer mm-hmm. owners and stuff in the brewing industry, like Phil over at 608 Brewing.
Yeah, I was just there yesterday.
Yeah, I really want to check out their new home and tap room.
Oh, yeah, I heard that they just opened up another one. I hope it goes well for them because, Hop Valley, I think it's Hop Valley, they had one in Spring Valley or Stewartville. They had like a second location because they're from Hudson, right? Is it Hop Valley or?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yes, they're green. Their logo's green. Anyways, they had one down in Spring Valley, I believe it was, and they recently shut it down. So I'm hoping for 608, it just kind of leaks out because Holman and La Crosse are on Alaska are now pretty much the same town after being that close to each other. So I hope that goes well for them. And I've seen people, they've had photos on social media. So next time I'm close to Holman, I'm about to stop in because I was just at their main location yesterday. And I like Citronado. I think that's what it's called. That's one of my favorites.
That's a good one. I'm not a huge fan of it just because I'm not a huge fan of the Citra hops. And that was super popular hops for a long time.
Sure. What's your favorite hop then?
Cascade is up there. That's a really good traditional one. Like Summit Saga, I'm pretty sure Cascade is the main hop in that one.
Oh, yeah, Summit Saga. That one has a bite to it for sure. Yes. Now I have another question that you just brought that up. So I see on the can or whatever it is, it talks about what hops they're using. I assume you have good knowledge of what the different ones mean, right?
More or less,
yeah. More or less, good. Because now I want to know, you said you don't like the Citra hops, you like the Cascade. Mm-hmm. So what's a Citra hop then?
A Citra hop is actually, if I'm remembering correctly, it was an older German-style hop that was then grown in New Zealand and Oregon.
Okay.
And the different temperatures, the different dirt nutrients and stuff.
Sure.
Provided a different terroir.
Okay. Well, what's that mean? What's a terroir?
It means growing conditions.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
It's mostly a wine term because you can have the same grape, but if it's grown in different dirt compilations and different temperatures, it's going to taste different in the wine.
Okay.
So it's almost the same thing for hops.
Oh, God. Well, I did not know that.
Yep.
So then what's a Cascade then?
An American hops that has been around for quite a long time and tends to have more citrusy, piney notes to it.
Yeah, I do know that piney flavors for sure in that because you said it's the main one in Saga. I'm sorry. Yep. It's Saga Summit Brewing IPA, and that one definitely has a very piney flavor to it. So that's your favorite hop to have.
It's up there, yeah.
Is there another one called Mosaic?
Yep. Mosaic is another one of my favorites, too.
Really? Okay, so what's that one, then?
That one is just, I mean, they're all hops. They all grow in a bind. They're actually all cousins to the cannabis family.
They look like it, so that doesn't surprise me.
So Mosaic is another one that was just bred slightly different to try to bring out certain flavors.
Okay.
And it tends to have a lot of tropical fruit, stone fruit.
Okay, so are those the three main hops, the flavor-wise? Is it Mosaic, Cascade?
No.
There
are so many hops. Hundreds of varieties of hops.
So each one just gives it a slightly different flavor is what it's going to do, depending on how it was growing, basically.
Yeah.
Okay, now that's good to know because I love IPAs, but I didn't know all that. So that's fantastic for me to know because the next time I go, I will be now knowing, okay, if I get this one that has these hops in it, this is what I can expect for the flavor.
Yep.
Cool. So you like the Cascade. It's got more of a piney, citrusy flavor. Understandable, because that one does, to me, have a lot of bite. So I like Citra because I like to drink my IPAs in the summer for the most part on the river. So it's got to have more of a summery flavor to it. Not that I can drink it, but I would rather drink something with the piney flavor in the wintertime. It just seems like it fits more.
I get that.
Yep.
And, I don't know. It's something for me, a beer that has too much Citra hops in it has that almost cat urine type aroma to it.
What cat piss you drinking, man?
I said aroma.
That's hilarious.
You walk into somebody's house that has a dirty litter box or they have too many male cats.
I love it.
You know that smell.
All right, guys. If it's got too many Citra hops in it, it might smell like urine. Cat piss specific. That's hilarious.
And really that cat pissy smell.
Yep.
Is a notable thing in a lot of hops.
Oh, okay. Now that's interesting, because the next time I go and I have one, I'm going to sniff it. I'm going to see if that's what it smells like, because as in real estate, I've been to houses that have litter boxes, and I know what you're talking about. That smell is very distinct.
Yes.
So now I'm going to smell it next time I'm at the brewery. So how long did this one take you to make? I'm assuming you made 10 gallons of this, right?
Yep.
So how long does the ale take to make then?
The fastest turnaround I've had from grain to glass was 5 days.
5 days, okay. Yep. So that's now what a lager would take longer, correct?
Yep.
What about an IPA then?
An IPA is a type of ale.
Okay.
So depending, and there's a lot of factors that go into it. The higher alcohol, the longer it's going to take to ferment. Lower alcohol beers tend to ferment a little faster. If you're using a yeast that can handle high temperatures, those tend to ferment faster.
Okay.
So, yeah, I've turned some IPAs around in a week or two.
Okay.
It's probably a little quick. Probably still pulling up some active yeast and stuff in when I'm pushing them that quickly. But I tend to procrastinate a lot. So
when it comes to the alcohol content in a beer, is it the longer it ferments, the more alcohol it's going to have, or how does that get determined?
No, it's really the amount of sugars that are in the beer before it ferments.
Okay.
So a beer before fermenting is called wort.
Wort?
Yep.
W-O-R-T?
Yes, I
think. Okay, okay. Like a wart on your hand or on your foot.
Yeah.
Okay, sounds like the same. Okay, perfect. I want to make sure we're on the same page here.
But, so yeah, it's, we kind of talked a little bit about this earlier. You start the brewing process with a mash, and that's where you grind up your grains just to break open the outer shell, add it to some hot water, and let it sit for about an hour to let those enzymes break down the starches into simple sugars. And then you drain the liquid wort at that point.
Okay.
And it'll be either like yellowy, or depending on the amount of dark grains you have in there, anywhere from that like pale yellow golden light color to dark stout, sometimes going into the reds and stuff for the color spectrum of it. And that is very sweet.
What's sweet then?
The wort.
The wort is very sweet.
It's very sticky sweet.
Okay.
Because you have all of those sugars that were just broken down from the starches, are available in that. You run that off into a kettle, and usually that's where I add my first hop addition.
Okay.
And that's going to be your bittering hops. The longer that you boil the wort with hops in it, the more of the compounds in the hops break down and create a bittering compound.
Gotcha. How was the so how do you know how much alcohol content is in something? Is there a way of measuring that?
Yep. So after you boil for about an hour, there's been a lot of experiments done with shorter boil times and stuff, and most of the time it still creates good beer. But the longer you boil, the more water you're boiling off, the more condensed it's going to be, and then there's off-flavor compounds that get boiled off in the boil as well.
Okay.
If you ever had a beer that has almost that like buttery flavor to it?
I think I have had something similar, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of that is caused from some of those compounds that maybe didn't get boiled off.
Okay, gotcha.
So usually after the boil, you chill the wort, and then you use a hydrometer or a refractometer. A hydrometer is a float level where you are filling a container full of the cooled wort. You float the hydrometer in it, and it will tell you how many points off of water it is.
Okay.
And that tells you how much sugar is in it. A hydrometer is just you put a couple drops on a lens and then you look at it, and it will tell you also how far away from water it is.
Obviously the higher the percentage, the less like water it is.
Yep.
Oh, so that's how it's measured.
Yes.
Well, so that's then cool. Water would be 0.0.
Some of them are actually 1.
Really?
0.0 is water, yeah.
Okay. So then everything above that is talking about how much alcohol it has inside
How much potential alcohol.
How much potential alcohol. Perfect.
I mean, something like Halle Berry, you're going to have some solid compounds in there that aren't sugars or are non-fermentable. So then you add yeast into your fermenter, you transfer the cooled wort into the fermenter, and you put it in a cool, dark place to let it ferment for a week to a couple months.
Sure.
Some meads and ciders, it's a couple years.
Okay, wow. I have my brother-in-law, he likes to make his own mead. He has a mead kit. He likes to make his own mead. He's just getting into it, but he's got a Norwegian background, and he was on episode, I think, 4 or 5, and he was talking about how he makes mead and enjoys making that process, too. And mm-hmm. Maybe it's therapeutic for some people to do this. I'm sure you actually love doing this, so it's probably very fun for you as well. So this one only took possibly about maybe less than a week to make, huh?
Probably, I want to say this one, I was actually on the game and had it fermenting for a couple weeks.
Okay.
Because the longer you let it sit in the fermenter, more of those solid compounds and stuff are going to settle down to the bottom of the fermenter.
Sure. This one is growing on me. I am really liking this one.
Nice.
I had it at the first time I had it, I think it was at the COVID year.
The Winona Tasting Trek.
Yes, that's what it was called, wasn't it? They kind of did a different name where we had to be on the golf course. Really cool atmosphere, to be honest with you. That was the first time I ever had this, and I wasn't so sure how I felt about it, but you brought it from fresh from home, and man, I'm really starting to like this. Like, this just goes down easy.
Yeah.
So what's the alcohol content on this one, then?
I want to say this one is in that, like, 5 to 6% range.
5 to 6. That's about what most ales I feel are. When I see them up on the board at a place, if I ever see an ale, it always seems about that 5.5 to 6-ish. So is it pretty standard, depending on what you're brewing, then, of what it's going to turn out to be, roughly?
Yeah, there's beer styles. Obviously, the IPA is a type of beer style.
Yep.
Stout is a type of beer style.
Sure.
And they usually have alcohol range for it to be within style.
Okay.
So
the styles make, if you do a certain style, it's going to roughly fall within that range of ABV. Sorry. So ABV is what the alcohol content is. The IBU is how hoppy it might be.
Yep. And I never finished saying this, but when the fermentation process is done, you do another hydrometer reading, and the alcohol weighs less than the sugar does.
Okay.
And alcohol, I believe, also weighs less than water. So sometimes you'll have a beer ferment down to less than that 1.0 hydrometer reading.
Sure. That's interesting.
And then there's calculators online. You plug in your starting gravity and your finishing gravity.
Man,
and that will tell you the alcohol.
This is scientific.
Yeah.
It's a very scientific process. I didn't realize.
I am really bad about remembering to take my hydrometer readings.
Yeah.
And for the most part, I just kind of go, the wort wants to become beer. I'll figure out the ABV on it later.
It's a crapshoot right now. Yep. It might be 8, it might be 5, who knows?
You'll find out. I can't have a close idea to where it's going to turn out. Part of that bad habit comes from when I worked at City Brewing.
Oh, down in La Crosse.
Yep.
I didn't know you worked there.
Huge brewery. Yeah, we're talking about Island City's 15-barrel brew system. City Brewing's is a 1,500-barrel brew system. Oh,
holy cow. They're the ones with the world's largest six-pack, right?
Yep.
Yes. That's awesome. So they had 1,500, you say?
Yes.
Whoa. And that's pretty big.
They had two 1,500-barrel brew systems that then split into four different boilers.
Okay.
All 1,500-barrel capacity. So
sure.
That was very, structured factory brewing, where it's like you had to be on time for everything because they wanted, something boiling in each of the kettles fairly close to each other.
Mm-hmm. So what beer were they? What beer does City Brewing make down there? I don't even know, I guess.
Four Loko.
Four Loko. Okay.
They make Four Loko.
Is that still a thing?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay. What else
Mike's
do they
Hard
make?
Lemonade, the Kinky malt beverages, the Schmiernoffs.
I was not thinking that at all. Mm-hmm. I was thinking beers.
They do a lot of the FMB's flavored malt beverages.
Okay.
And a lot of what they brew is called NMB, neutral malt base.
Sure.
And, it's super simple. Like, for that 1,500-barrel brew system, they use 1 pound of hops in that.
Okay.
Because you have to have hops in it to call it a malt beverage.
Oh, I suppose. Okay, so are we cool with trying the next one?
Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to crack that. And this is in one of Island City's old growlers, which is actually very, very nice because I'm actually let you open it. And those growlers are really nice because they're insulated by Camelback. But so now which one are we having here?
This is my winter spice version of my sour mojito ale.
Ooh, that sounds pretty good.
So I took my base recipe that has lime zest, lime juice, and mint in it. You know, the typical ingredients for a mojito.
Yep. Okay, now this has a lot clearer. It yep. looks more like your, I don't know, Pilsner lager that you'd probably see coming out.
And then, so this
Cheers,
one,
Corey.
I added some fresh cranberries, some nutmeg, and ginger to it to okay. try to get it into the, more of that winter spice.
Oh, that'll be so good. One of my favorite winter-type beers is the Christmas Ale by Breckenridge. So
I know. I've listened to it in episode one of your podcast.
Ah, yes, you listened, Corey. Thank you. Oh, dude, this is cool. This has such good flavors. I'm trying to figure out. I know I can taste the mojito like a minty in there with...
Oh, I'm sorry. I said nutmeg. It's actually clove.
Clove?
Yes.
This has got so many flavors in it. Mm-hmm. I really like this one.
Thank you.
It's really crisp. Crisp, yeah. Clean, and cool. I love it. It's really... I like this one. This is good. Are you bringing this one to the brew tour?
Probably not this exact one.
No? Okay.
Just, I don't think the clove... It's going to go all that well in the summertime.
Really don't think so. Man, this is such a refreshing beer.
Because this kind of tastes like winter in a glass.
It does taste like winter in a glass, but like a really not a heavy beer at all.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. This is really good. I really like this one. This one pops.
So yeah, last year I brought the base of this one, the just mojito sour ale.
Okay.
That I called Invasive Mint. And that one was at the craft beer tour and got a lot of good praise.
Okay. Well, I can see why, man. I feel like I got a bunch of different flavors going in my tongue just all at one time. Mm-hmm. And I can definitely taste that little spice to it of like that Christmas spicy you would have. That's really, you said nutmegs in this?
No, clove.
Clove. I'm sorry.
At first I said nutmeg, so that was my fault.
Okay. So, when you make this one, are you just throwing in the ingredients just to see what happens? And
I do that a lot.
Just experiment?
Yeah. Absolutely. I like experimental brewing. If I want a good IPA, yeah, I can brew one. But why when there's so many great ones on the liquor store shelf?
Yeah, that's true. Like, this is not on the liquor store shelf. I can tell you that right now. This is not. So what kind of beer is this one considered then?
This would still be under that experimental sour ale.
Okay, still under the ale. Takes maybe a week or two to make.
Yep.
It's the same process.
Yep.
Okay.
Really, the main difference between these two is the yeast.
Okay.
For the brewing process. This one uses a yeast called Philly Sour.
Okay.
And it's a newer yeast that hit the homebrewing market, and it's actually what Island City was using for all of their sours.
Berliner?
Yep.
Okay.
I'm assuming Two Fathoms is using it now, too.
Sure.
It used to be if you wanted to make a sour beer, you had to either kettle sour, which means that after it was done with that mash process, they would add bacteria to it that would create lactic acid.
Oh, gotcha.
In the beer. So... You had to do that before boiling, and it would take like a day, and it was a hassle. And if that bacteria got into your fermenters at all, it was really hard to get out of it.
Ooh, yeah, you don't want bacteria, right?
Right. Unless you're trying to brew a sour beer.
Right.
I found out recently that the Shell's Star Killer Brewing just recently shut down, and it was their offshoot sour brewery.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Shell's? What did they make? Because I feel like I've had some of it at the state fair.
Very possibly.
Okay. So they just shut down because...
I'm guessing, like, they were doing super traditional sour method.
Okay.
Where they would take basically a finished beer, and then they'd move it into... It was actually their original cypress wood lagering tanks.
Okay.
They found them in an old storeroom, because if you've never been to Shell's, it's amazing. It's like the second oldest brewery in the United States.
Sure, yeah.
It's huge.
And that's one of our big ones in Minnesota, because mm-hmm. isn't it right in New Ulm, Minnesota, yep. I believe? Yeah. I love going to their little spot up at the State Fair. There's one, I believe it's by Shell's, called Fresh Pints. That's one of my favorite. It looks like the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Yep. Their can is really pops big time, and that one's one of my favorites. I think, I don't know this for sure, I think it's a cold IPA.
That sounds right.
I love cold IPAs are probably one of my favorite types of beer. I like the IPA, but if it's a cold, and I assume that's made cold then, like a lager, Were there...
Yeah, if... So I'm not exactly sure what the difference between an IPL and India Pale Lager.
Yeah.
Like what they have at Two Fathoms
now. Yes, yeah.
And a cold IPA. I'm not exactly sure what the difference is.
Okay.
I've been told the difference is in a cold IPA still uses an ale yeast, but ferments cold.
Sure.
And an IPL actually uses a lager yeast and then uses the IPA grain bill and hop bill.
So there's different... There's different yeast for different types of beer, right?
Yes. There's, okay. Once again, probably hundreds of varieties of yeast.
Just like hops, a bunch of varieties. Okay, see, I didn't know that. This whole thing is just brand new to me, and I'm so glad that you're here breaking this down into a perspective that maybe someone will understand, because you just go there and you're like, man, there's all these beers, but I always wondered, how the heck do you make it, or how do you even know how to make these types of things? And you're telling us a fantastic way of how these things are done. Different types of yeast, different types of hops. What other product, like, you get your products from a certain place, right?
Mostly, yeah.
Or do you go and try to go to a different place and see what their stuff is all about?
I mean, I've got a few websites online that I like to use. Adventures in Home Brewing is one that I really like.
Sure.
Northern Brewer is one that a lot of people used pretty heavily back in the day, and then Anheuser-Busch bought them.
Okay.
And a lot of homebrewers stopped using them, and now Anheuser-Busch sold them, and I don't know who owns them, but they're really useful. Like, they have just about everything you need.
Sure.
And they originally were based out of Minneapolis.
Okay. Is there any local places in Winona here that has the stuff that you need at all, or not really?
Not anymore.
Not anymore.
The co-op used to have the stuff.
Oh, really?
But especially during COVID, a lot of people seemed to take a break from brewing.
Yeah.
Just, you know, you couldn't get together and share a beer with your friends.
That's the fun part, is when you're sitting here having a conversation with beer as just part of it. It's just, I don't know, you're right. Like, you and me, this was what, 2 weeks ago, we were just sitting down at Island City, or now Two Fathoms, on their soft opening, and we sat there for, I was there for about 2 hours, and you and me sat and talked for probably about 45 minutes just over a beer while the band was playing, people were talking. It's just like an easy thing to do, but you're right, during COVID, people probably, you know, couldn't get together. They were drinking, I know that.
Oh, yeah, I was working at Highway 61 Liquor at the time.
Oh, man.
As soon as the lockdown started, every day was like the day before 4th of July, which is one of the busiest days for liquor stores.
Yeah.
It's just, we were ran ragged during the lockdowns.
Really? That's kind of funny, though. But I heard a lot of people were out drinking because we're sitting inside and we have nothing else to do.
Right? It's not like I'm going to talk to my family.
Yeah, we want to talk to my family. Correct. So, yeah, outside of brewing, what other things in life do you like to do? I mean, I only really know you in the beer light of things. I don't really know much other than that about Corey. So what else do you like to do outside of beer?
Well, I play a lot of, like, Dungeons & Dragons and stuff like that. I'm a huge nerd. And
you said it, man. You said it. That's okay, though.
It's okay. Nerds are cool now.
Yes, you're right. And you know what's making a huge comeback is Pokemon.
Yeah.
Never thought that was going to make a comeback, because it came out when we were, gosh, the first time I remember was, like, 98 or 99 it came out. And now everyone's coming back.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. Did you know, have you been to the brewery outside of Rochester that is themed after?
Chaotic Good.
Chaotic Good, yeah.
No, I've had a lot of their beer.
Sure.
And so apparently I went to high school with, like, the brewer's wife.
Molly, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. We did. Look back in your yearbook. She's in there. Yep. That's how I know about the place, because I was friends with her. I'm sure I'm still friends with her on Facebook. But also I saw this coming about last fall. I went there. Cool place, but it is themed after Dungeons and Dragons. So that's a place you need to head up, I think.
Yeah, and I've actually got a friend that lives right in Kasson. Kasson. I can never remember.
It's Kasson.
Kasson.
Yep.
And he's like, yeah, if you ever want to swing by, let me know. We'll hit up Chaotic Good together. And it's just, life has been so busy. I'm a single dad.
Okay. So you play a lot of Dungeons and Dragons. I don't know anything about that. What is it? It's a card game?
It's a tabletop role-playing game.
Okay.
There are a lot of different systems that you can use to play. Dungeons and Dragons is just the most popular one.
Sure.
And so you sit down at a table with a group of friends, and you have one person that used to be called the DM, and a lot of people still use that term, Dungeon Master.
Okay.
But a lot of games since, like, just yesterday I was playing a Star Wars-based one.
Sure.
You know, not a whole lot of dungeons there, so it's, they tend to change it to GM, Game Master.
Sure, yeah.
And they're kind of running the story. They're running all of the NPCs, the villains, and the enemies that you're going to fight.
Okay. NPC is non-playable character. Is that correct? Yes. Okay. See, I've always heard that term in video game terminology, but I didn't know what it meant, and then I had to look it up, and I double-checked it with you.
Yep.
Okay.
And then the players have their own characters made.
Sure.
I'm currently in two different games. One, a classic Dungeons & Dragons game, where I play a goblin alchemist named Uck. Yes. That one's not varying far away from what I do in real life with the beer.
Oh, really? Okay.
I have him as a booze-obsessed goblin that...
Oh, so you make up, like, how the character's going to be then?
Yep. You make up your own character, make up your backstory.
Oh, neat.
They have some pre-constructed ones that you can use depending on the system.
Sure.
For getting into it. And then in the Star Wars campaign, we're playing in an era, like, before even the prequel movies.
Okay.
And I'm playing a little T3 droid. It's kind of like an R2-D2, but clunkier.
Sure.
Because it's older.
So when you mean that you're in these games, do they last for days, months?
Oh, yeah.
Really? It's not like just something you sit down and you're done in like an hour or two?
No, we were playing for 3 hours last night.
Oh.
And we've been playing that game for probably close to a year now, about every other Friday.
How does it end? Like, when
the story's done.
So the DM is the guy that's in charge of it, the person that's in charge of it, and they tell you when the story's done, or how's that
pretty
work?
Pretty much, yeah. It's, yeah. I think our current DM has about 3 storylines he wants us to run through.
Okay.
And then he wants to take a break from the Star Wars campaign.
I've
kind of been bouncing around an idea of running a Ghostbusters-themed one.
Oh, that'd be kind of fun.
Yeah.
So, now, you know, some people say Monopoly's a long game. Go play Dungeons & Dragons. It sounds even longer. It could go for a year even. That's hilarious.
I mean, there are world records for longest-running campaign, and we're talking 15, 20 years.
Does a campaign mean a game?
Yeah.
Is it the same thing? Okay. Like
the single story, same characters being used.
Okay. So then do you guys get together in person, or is it something you do online, or how does it work?
I've only played in person.
Okay.
Especially like during COVID, a lot of online systems came out.
Yeah, I think I heard about that too, because back on episode one of them, Justin, he had a two-part episode. He's big into that with his friends, and they were playing online. I go, how the heck do you play online? He was kind of getting into it. I didn't understand it. But, yeah, it sounds like there's an online version probably after COVID.
Basically Zoom with some apps on it so that you can see the map or
everybody
can see your dice rolls.
Okay, that's cool. That's cool. So you're really big into that then?
Yeah.
Anything else that other than that, like you said, you go, I'm a nerd. That's cool. Is there any other nerd things that are out there? Because I think everyone, it can be a nerd in their own aspect. I mean, you could be a car nerd.
Beer nerd,
for sure. Is there any other things that you like to do outside of that, too?
I like some of the collectible card games, Magic the Gathering.
Oh, yeah. I figured that had to go right along with it,
kind of, right? Yeah, I mean, Dungeons & Dragons and Magic the Gathering are owned by the same company.
Oh, okay. That would make sense, then.
And then recently I've been into the new Disney collectible card game, Lorcana.
Okay.
And I got into that one thinking it would be easy for my 9-year-old son to get into with me. And he's got, like, no interest in it.
What's he got interest in?
He's...
Total opposite things of you?
No.
No, okay.
A lot of video games and stuff.
Sure.
He's really into this game on Roblox called Blocks Fruits.
Oh, yeah. My students talk about Roblox all the time. I don't really know what it is. They talk about Fortnite, too. Don't know what that is either. I've never played it.
I tried playing Fortnite and couldn't get into it.
Sure.
It's basically the newest Halo.
Oh, okay. So it's like Halo. I kind of know what that is. I mean, outside of Grand Theft Auto, I'm kind of lost in the video game world, except for if it's a sports one. Kind of lost on it.
Fortnite is a big versus game where you play online and it's you and a team versus another team.
Oh, that kind of sounds fun, though.
Yeah, and they basically took your normal first-person shooter type thing.
Sure.
And then added like a base-building element to it.
Nice.
Like,
okay.
I really like the idea behind Fortnite. I just could never get into it.
No. So you're into what are you into then, video game wise?
I really like a lot of the like single player or co-op, where it's more based on finishing a story.
Okay.
Like Dead Space is one of my favorites.
Sure. Okay.
BioShock.
I've heard of those. I don't know much about them, but I've heard of them. So yeah. It's like a story. You're into storylines, it sounds like, because yeah. Dungeons and Dragons, someone's coming up with the story and you guys are following a storyline.
Yeah, or so screwing it up.
Or screwing it up. So that makes sense why you would like those games, like the storyline. That's cool, mm-hmm. too. I think that's kind of why I probably like Grand Theft Auto, even though it's a little different. There's a story, missions to be fulfilled and stuff like that. And then the sports ones, you're just trying to beat someone.
Right.
But, you know, video games have come such a long way since when we were little.
Right.
I never got into it because I was an only child, so me trying to have fun playing against a computer got old real fast. So unless I had a friend sleeping over or a parent wanted to play with me, I was like, I'm done with this. But if it was online like things are nowadays, you could have so much fun with people across the world.
Right. My son starts a phone call with his cousin, and then they play this Blocks Fruits Roblox game together. Sure. And they'll do that for hours.
Yeah.
And then they'll get on like a conference call with a bunch of their friends.
That kind of sounds fun though. Yeah. If I was a child, how old is he?
Nine.
Yeah. If I was 9 years old, I'd be having a blast.
Right.
Man, we used to call up our friends too, but we couldn't go play video games against each other. We could just talk.
Right. I'd call up my friend and who lived a couple houses down on the block, and he'd come over, and then we'd take turns playing the single player game.
That's awesome. Yeah. I know. I was like, man, Mario's fun. But then I was like, if I want to play a sports game, I got to play against the computer. And then I got to put on easy, medium, or hard. I'm like, I'm just trying to beat a computer. There was no storyline really.
Right.
Nowadays, there's a storyline. Like, you can go pick up a sports game now and you have to get drafted. You create your own player. You're going to the major leagues or whatever it might be. It's a little bit more like even wrestling. Wrestling's a big one that I used to play a lot of. Create a character and they got to start going up the ranks to get the championship belt. And this, now this weekend is WrestleMania weekend. So
nice.
It's all coming full circle. But anything else you want to add to the podcast at all? About who Corey is?
No, not that I can think of.
I mean, we've been going for an hour, and I think you did a fantastic job explaining the brewing process. If you wanted to get into it as a home brewer, just for a hobby, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't have to sell it. You can't sell it, actually, without a license. Right. But if you want to get into it just for a hobby, it doesn't sound like it's too expensive. I mean, there's a lot of hobbies that are way more expensive than brewing beer, but if it's something people like to do, I think it's a great idea because, well, like you said, you can get together with a friend, drink a beer and have some fun and maybe play Dungeons and Dragons, maybe a video game, maybe just sitting there watching a sports game. But beer always brings people together, it seems.
Yes, yes, it does.
And I want to thank you for bringing these. That is good. So if anybody's listening, go down to the Winona Craft Beer Tour. It's usually the end of June, like the last Saturday in June-ish.
Yep.
Corey will be down there with his Halle Berry, right?
For sure.
And that has the raspberry and the jalapeno notes in it.
Yep.
That is that's a really good one. It really grew on me. This one really set me back to like, man, this is just something else. This is Christmas in a glass, like you said. But I think you could drink this in the summer and be just as good. Because it's got like that little minty flavor to it, which to me is like, I don't know, a summery vibe.
Yeah.
And I love it. So, man, you brought two fantastic beers. You're the first person to bring brews onto Brews and Crews where you actually personally made the Brews and Crews.
Nice.
So I appreciate you bringing this. This is fantastic. Again, Corey, I want to thank you and I want to cheers to you too.
Cheers.
And for those who are listening or watching, you can go on YouTube, watch the episode if you'd like. Visually, or if you're in your car, subscribe to Spotify. It's on there, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcast, all the major ones pretty much that are out there. You can listen. Please subscribe, like, download, leave a comment, whatever it is. It really helps me out on the podcast. And Corey, once again, I want to thank you for coming on. It's been fantastic, and it's been really good to learn about the process of beer. So yeah. We'll see everyone next week. Cheers.
Cheers.